Well, let's turn to Proverbs. Well, you don't have to turn to Proverbs 23:7. You know what it is. As soon as I say it, you know probably where I'm going to go to some degree. You think you know where I'm going to go, but you don't. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So as a man considers things in his heart and thinks and dwells on them, then it becomes a part of who he is. It's a part of his disposition. I mean, the way he thinks becomes the way he acts, the way he talks, the way he expresses himself. It's part of him. And then over in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 5, in the context, it's talking about being risen with Christ. You seek the things which are above, not the things which are down here. Where Christ sitteth on the right hand of God. Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth. So your affections have to be taken away from this physical world into the eternal world. For you are dead, and your life is hid with Christ in God. When Christ, who is our life, shall appear, then shall you also appear with him in glory. But here's the qualifier, verse 5. Mortify, that's just another word for crucify, therefore your members, and that means your eyes, I mean your hands, your feet, your every part of your being, what you're upon the earth, and then he speaks about fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry. And then down to verse 8, he says, But now you also put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth. Lie not one to another, seeing that you have put off the old man with his deeds. So when he says back up in 5, mortify, he's basically saying, be dead to something. Be dead to these things. They are to be dead, having no power over us. That's the implication that's being made there. And what I want to look at today is really a question. Do you have a cross attitude? It's not what you think. And we often talk about the subject, don't we? I know y'all love it when we do. But here's the cross. And guess who's on it? We are. What does it mean to have a cross attitude? Well, it's a twofold meaning. As a noun, it means two beams that go together and cross, just like I got up there. That's one thing it could mean, and it's of course, certainly the cross as Christ died upon and the cross that we're supposed to take up. But it's also an adjective. It means to be annoyed or angry. And so why I got this guy up here, because he's angry. In other words, I'm mad at you. Not really. But that's the whole concept behind having a cross attitude, because it's a person who really has a disposition that is always angry about something. Always bitter, unforgiving, frustrated, discouraged. I mean, he just has a negative attitude. And so what do you think now? Do you have a cross attitude? It got quiet. I mean, I can't get an answer out of anybody. Well, it must be something to that then, I guess, huh? I mean, do you, you know, we all get cross sometimes, don't we? But it doesn't make it right. But a lot of times, too, do you get angry at your children? Do you get cross at your husband? Do you get cross with your wife? Do you get cross with your people you work with? Or, just something like that. That somebody just crosses your feelings and hurts you and it makes you cross at them? We don't hear that very much. I remember my grandmother used to say, I'm cross with you. It was hard to get that to work sometimes. I mean, I get that a lot. But sometimes you be in bad traffic and you get cross at the way somebody's driving. And you start mouthing off or saying something. Where did you get your driver's license? Why don't you go back to New York? Or something like that. And you find yourself just, that disposition comes out. It shows something about what's going on inside of you. It's a revealing thing, because you catch yourself a lot and saying that and say, hey, you're not supposed to do that. Or you get into a situation where you're at a grocery store or somewhere and the service is poor. Now, you all know what I mean about that. I mean, they're not very quick at checking you out. And that could get very bad. And you find yourself getting a little upset. Yesterday, I had to go by Home Depot because I had somebody doing some work for me, and they wanted some bags of cement. So I went by there to get these little bags of cement, went in and paid for it, and I said, can you get somebody to help me load it? I had my truck right there. And she said, yeah. And I went out there, and nobody came out there. I waited and waited. So I went back in and asked another lady, I need somebody to help me load the cement. Meanwhile, I grabbed a bag of that cement and carried it to my truck, and it spilled all over me. Now, you know, the cross is starting to come here, but not the right way. I find myself, I've got this cement all over me, and I'm dirty, and my truck now is dirty. I mean, I had my good truck with me. And I didn't like it a whole lot. So I was getting a little annoyed, but I just sat there for that and just sat there and looked at it. And finally I went back in and asked another lady. I said, I need somebody out here to help me. And she said, I'll get them right there. And I turned around and looked, and there was a guy out there. So I went out there, and he said, here's my ticket. I need 7 bags of cement. So he started hauling them over there, and I got up in the truck so I could stack them up. And, you know, we got it done. But, you know, I was ruining that thing. I mean, it wasn't working very good for me at that time. I started thinking about that, and I thought, well, we all get cross sometimes, but sometimes we allow it to get the best of us, and it causes a little problem in our life. And we get ourselves in trouble. So you find yourself in that situation sometimes. So we have to guard our attitude, because if we don't, our attitude will take control of us. But we're supposed to have control of it. Because you have to keep it from getting angry or just annoyed. Because that's what it means in the form of an adjective. I'm cross. I'm annoyed. You ever been annoyed with somebody? Ever been annoyed with your children? Your wife? Maybe your husband's ought to be quiet on that one. Or your husband? Yes, we all have. So the disposition of man is such that he is prone to these things. It's just the nature of the beast, you would say. Somebody hurts your feelings and you get angry, or somebody says something that doesn't cross really with you in a good way, and you find yourself annoyed with that person. And before you know it, something starts just churning inside. You start brewing inside. Rather than taking the cross up and denying that attitude, you're allowing that thing to rule you. And that's not good. So when you say, do you have a cross attitude, this has a twofold meaning, which is what we'll go along and see. Because a lot of times the cross attitude we have is negative. And we find ourselves expressing it often, sometimes if not to other people, by way of the internet or telephone or gossip or whatever, we find ourselves expressing it inwardly. You know, you're sitting there just murmuring and complaining about something, and it's just going on through you and through you and through you. And so the flesh doesn't like to be crossed. It really doesn't. I mean, when you read, the devil's going about like a roaring lion, 1 Peter 5:8 says, seeking whom he may devour. And if you don't think the devil's not going to try to provoke you to get upset, you're deceived. Because the devil loves to provoke us and try to entice us to sin. Because he knows, to some degree, the Bible says about man in James chapter 1 and verse 14, a man is drawn away by his own lust. That's the flesh. And so what happens is, God doesn't tempt us to sin, but you know what tempts us? It's the inward fleshly disposition of man, the nature of man. Uncrucified human being or uncrucified Christian. Worst thing in the world is uncrucified Christian. He doesn't know what it means to be on a cross. So we're easily tempted to get upset, and then we lash out and we hurt somebody, or we say something we shouldn't say, or we maybe write a letter we shouldn't say, or email or something like that. But like James says, it reveals every man is tempted by his own lust from within. So our problem is really not people or things or circumstances as much as it is something inside of us. It's part of our nature. You know, you can provoke someone long enough, you know what they'll do? You'll get them angry. I know that's true. I've experienced that so many times. But Galatians chapter 5 says this in verse 15 and following. It reveals man has a war going on with inside of him. But if you bite and devour one another, take heed that you be not consumed one of another. This I say then, Walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. In other words, you can say here, we could rephrase that and say, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not gratify the lust of the flesh. And you find here, for the flesh wars against the Spirit, and the Spirit wars against the flesh. And these are in opposition the one to another, that you cannot do the things that you would. So it's trying to oppose you and stop you from doing the things that are right to do. That's the enemy that's working there. And it was appealing to our flesh. He's trying to entice us. As James says, we're enticed and drawn away. I mean, the devil baits us with something, and before you know it, we find ourselves jumping out and saying or doing things we shouldn't do. And so you look at that and you realize it reveals the war that's going on. And they can get the best of us a lot of times. We find ourselves, if we're not very careful, things get the best of us. Has that ever happened to you? We're just, it doesn't take much, it seems like. It's just a little event takes place and something happens. Just like yesterday, I pick up a bag of cement, and I mean, it's a 50-pound bag and it's heavy, but you know, you find it, it just busted. And it's all over the place. I told the guy, I said, I don't want that. He tells you, you know, I don't want it. I didn't pay for a busted bag. I want a full bag sealed. So he took it back and bought another one. So he did the right thing there, because if he hadn't, I probably would have gotten a little more cross rather than being on the cross. But anyways, I mean, those things can easily happen if you're not careful. And a lot of times we're not careful like we should be. You know, in Acts chapter 15, Paul and John Mark had a difference at the Jerusalem council they had there. And they split up. It says they had a contention. Now, if you would look that word up, contention, you'd be surprised what it means in the Greek. It means a violent altercation. A violent altercation. Now, I can't just imagine that happening between Paul and John Mark. Now, I don't know what that how you're going to apply that violent altercation. I mean, you see a lot of that today where people push people or smack people. I don't know that they did that. It might have just been verbal in words. But, I mean, what if he just pushed him and said, I don't want you with me. Get away. Could it have been something like that? I mean, that's one way you could interpret it. I mean, it could have gotten hot. And so that's the kind of thing we see happen. So it can happen to the best of us. In 2 Timothy 4:11, you read there, after he said, Demas has forsaken me, he speaks of it. Paul said, "And send John Mark to me. Send John to me, for he's profitable to me." So there was some reconciliation that took place in their relationship. So it gets down to attitude, doesn't it? What is our attitude towards the cross? What is our attitude towards everything that God has to say in His Word about the way we live? Because an attitude is a disposition or a state of mind, a sentiment that a person can have. It's a feeling you express that reveals who you really are. It's something that comes out of your mouth. As a man speaks out of the abundance of his heart, the mouth speaks. And so a lot of times, you know, the person's revealed by what he says. I mean, you just get all of a sudden cross at your children, and you start, don't do that, you know, I'm going to whip your, you know what, and you start before you know it, you're running, chasing after them with a broom or a switch or something. And, you know, it doesn't take much to set a person off. And I can understand being provoked to that place. I told you 10 times not to do that. Well, you shouldn't let them get away with it the second time. And so it's how you act and you respond that reveals what's really going on. Because an angry person, a lot of times we can say things like that. We say, he's not in a good state of mind. He's unstable. Something wrong with that person. They seem like they're always unforgiven or hateful or bitter. Or angry about everything. They're always criticizing something. Always negative. Well, that's not a good state of mind, is it? No, it's not. It's not what God wants us to have. And so people get annoyed and moody and discouraged and disappointed and frustrated. Those things happen to us in life. But if we allow our disappointment, our discouragements and frustrations and annoyances to take place, if we allow them to control us, we're not crucifying our members. We're not doing what God tells us to do, is being on the cross and dying out to those things, esteeming them as dead. We're looking at them as they're alive. We're helping them be revived. And Romans 6 tells us very clearly that legally that all this was done at the cross by Christ. because everything was crucified there at the cross. So it's all been taken care of as far as we're concerned. It's just us applying it. That's the hard part in it. When it gets down to application, it's always the difficult part of the Christian life, no matter what it is. To apply what you believe, to submit to your husband, it's the difficult part. To love your wife is a difficult part. To drive out there and not be annoyed all the time, it's a difficult part. To not get upset with the employees or employers, it's a difficult part of life. To not get upset with your children or annoyed, it's a difficult part to apply that every day. And we find ourselves in that kind of mood a lot of times. You know, I mean, if your dad just lost his job, it's no time to ask him, can you borrow the car? Or can I have $10? That's the wrong timing. Something's wrong with your timing chain. You need to have it adjusted. And so, but why do we get negative attitudes? Why do we get bad attitudes? It goes back to sinful thinking. It goes back to as a man thinks in his heart. It's sinful thinking because we're thinking things negatively. I mean, when you think anger, you're thinking sin. When you think envy, you are thinking sin. When you think about discouragement, you're being really a sinful person in your attitude. When you murmur and you're just murmuring quietly to yourself, that's sinful. Because it says in Philippians 2, murmur, don't murmur. Let everything be done without murmuring. Now, that would be quite a challenge for us to go through a whole week and not murmur once. Make that your goal. This week, anyways. And so why do we get these kind of attitudes? I mean, it just happens. Because you know the saying, if you sow a thought, you're going to reap an action. And you sow an action, then you're going to reap even more than that. You're going to reap a habit. And if you sow a habit, you're going to reap a lifestyle. So it's sowing and reaping thing. And the word we've used before is habitude. That is a word, habitude. A playoff of attitude. And a lot of people have a habitude where they have become habitually thinking a certain way. Habitually thinking, well, God can't do this and, you know, mad at the world and angry with everybody. And I understand some people's frustration. I really do. I understand their frustration with the government very much so. Doesn't make it right, though. But it's something that can annoy you really. And that's why I think a lot of them are really being popular out there right now. Because some people are smart enough to tap into that anger. And they're using it for their own advantage. I don't know how good that's going to work out for them. But you see, that's what's happening right now. And so you learn to live a certain way and you live within a culture and you find that that's something that breeds certain things. I mean, whatever it might be. Because we all come out of different backgrounds. We all come from different places and different jobs and everything else. We practice certain things and as a result of that, we practice, you know, we're told not to lie, but we lied. We're told not to cheat, but we cheated. We were told not to curse, but we cursed. We were told not to smoke, but we smoked. We were told not to fornicate, but did we? We were told not to fight. We were told a lot of these things by our parents over us. But though we were told those things, we did those things. I mean, so you know, sometimes we were told it's okay to lie, so we lied. Because society is that way today. It's okay to drink, so people drink. It's okay to lust. It's okay to have premarital sex, and so people just go ahead and do it. They say, what's the problem with it? That's their attitude. I mean, that's their whole mindset. Because when I'm speaking of attitude, I'm talking about a mind that is set on a certain way. And it's not on God's way. So we've sowed to the flesh for 20-plus years or more before we came to Christ. I was about 28 when I came to the Lord. So for 28 years of my life, I sowed to the flesh. Don't look at me like you terrible thing, because you know what? Some of y'all did it for 30 or 40 years. So we all are in the same boat, folks. We allowed our mind and our thinking to be influenced by certain things, whether it be home or whether it be school or whether it be friends or media or the politics or, you know, education. Something forms our mind. A religious upbringing, a self-righteous, proud parents that bring you up. There's a certain thing there that's bred into people's lives. Because you can see it with some people that are proud, you can see it come out in their children. Because it's in them. It's something they've been around all their life. It's something that's a disposition that's just bred. Some are brought up in a dysfunctional home, and they have abuse and neglect and everything else that takes place. There's no love. And you look at all that and you realize it creates a very negative attitude. They're dysfunctional. They're hurt. They're bitter. There's something down in there that affects their life. It affects their thinking. Now, it infects them. It's like a disease. It's just bred in them, and they just begin to be a part of that. And so usually the cycle continues through you and through another. And so, I mean, all you know to do, I mean, some brought up in that way, and they end up marrying an abusive mate. Process goes on. The abuse goes on. Or they marry somebody that's got a problem with alcohol, and then they have to suffer the abuse from that. Or verbal abuse. They marry somebody that's verbally abusive, and they have to endure that. Because it's something that's a cycle that goes on. Or it could be sexual abuse. You know, feminists are told all the time that all men are the same. Can't trust them. And you look at all the feminists out there today, and that's just the attitude you see expressed in every one of them. I mean, ain't none of them good looking. You can take what you want from that. I mean, they look like a bunch of crabs that crawled off the sea, up on the seashore. I mean, they are. I mean, most feminists have been in abusive relationships, and their mindset is right there. Because they've been in an abusive relationship, they come out of it, and they just begin to say things that they really don't understand what they're saying. It's just like the liberal minds today. I mean, you have a denominational mindset today, where the anti-tongues, anti-healing, anti-prosperity, that's a mindset. Where did they get that from? Why are people in the congregations the same way? Because the preacher said it. He's been down on the tongues, been down on the healing, down on prosperity, till it comes to their own needs, and then they say, well, we need money. Then they beg for it. But it's all this, it's something that's bred into people, and that's where all the doubt and fear come in through the religious system. And people don't believe anything anymore. And so attitudes that we have are about what you allow to influence your life. What you allow into your life. And a lot of times we're not allowing the best things into our life. We're allowing the wrong things into our life. So who or what is influencing you? Where's your influence coming from? Because that's where the mindset is. You need to cut it off. You need to crucify it. You need to really literally have a cross attitude in the sense, I am going to overcome this by denying its right over me. That's the right kind of cross attitude, not the wrong kind. And so what you do and who you're around and everything else affects your mind. It shapes your mind. It molds you. You're molded. Like going to a school as a young child, you're taught certain things and your mind is being molded. You learned your ABCs and your basically fundamental arithmetic and English and stuff. You learn the fundamentals. And your mind becomes shaped and formed. But you learn more than that too. Because as you play with the kids, you learn certain things too. You learn how to fight and to be hateful and rebellious. It's something that goes on in a person's life. So the people who you associate with, good or bad, doesn't make any difference other than the fact that if you're good, it should have a good effect upon you, and the bad has a really bad effect upon you. And people don't seem to distinguish that difference. They haven't discerned good from evil, as it says in Hebrews. Because if you run with the pigs, you end up in a mire with the pigs. That's an old saying I believe is true. And a lot of people are running with the pigs, and it's shown by their attitude. So their life is controlled by what others say and think. Look at Numbers chapter 13. Familiar account. Because how we see things affect the way we live. It affects the choices we make. Because the reason we make choices about is because of what we have learned. Now here we have the story here about these 12 men that were ordained of God to go in and check out the land. We know the story, the background. So they wanted to go into the land and check it out, and they came back and they found that the land was good. It's plentiful with fruit. We pick up in verse 30, and Caleb stilled the people and before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and possess it, for we're well able to overcome it. But the men that went up with him, we'd be not able to go up." So here we got some opposition right away. It starts right away. This is the same thing you find in a lot of people. You find it in homes, you find it in businesses, you find it in churches, right there. We can't do that. We're not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we. That's too much money to spend, or whatever they want to argue. And they brought up an evil report of the land, which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, "The land is through which we have gone to search. It's bad. It is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature. They're too big for us. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which were come of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight." So they had a grasshopper mentality. And we know what happens from there. I mean, you go into chapter 14, all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. "Then all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and the whole congregation said unto them." Now, let me ask you a question. Why did the whole congregation start doing that? Because of 10 people that were negative. They didn't pay attention to the two that were positive, Joshua and Caleb. Nope, they listened to the other 10. So it began to spread and began to have an effect upon everybody. And said, "Would to God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would to God that we have died in this wilderness." I mean, what an attitude that is. We just soon perish. I mean, just give they've given up on. But we know what God said about this as we read over in verse 27 of chapter 14. "How long will I bear with this evil congregation?" So what did God think of the congregation? He called it evil, which murmureth against me. And why were they evil? Because they murmured against him. "I have heard their murmurings of the children of Israel, which they murmured against me." And it's spoken of also in 1 Corinthians 10:10. And so there's the problem right there. I mean, you see it happen all over the place. And here it's happening right here again. It shows what you think and the circumstances you're around can have an effect upon you, and it can cause you to begin to act in a certain way, talk in a certain way, and express yourself in a certain way that it begins to spread around and have it forms an attitude and it begins to go through the whole congregation. So be careful. Because the mind's a powerful influence on man's life. It's very powerful. It's more powerful than I think we want to give it credit for. Because as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So what you're pondering on and going through a lot in your mind is the very thing that you're beginning to form an opinion about. It doesn't take long to do that. And so I think negative thoughts throw a person into a mental battle. Look over in the New Testament in Mark chapter 4. I mean, all it takes is something to go wrong somewhere. I mean, let IRS write you a letter and tell you that you owe them a certain amount of money and see what kind of attitude you have all of a sudden. I mean, just check it out. You don't know till you experience that. But Mark chapter 4 and verse 37. Here they are going over the other side. I mean, Jesus said, "Let us pass over to the other side." And when they went, sent away the multitudes, they took him even as he was in the ship. And there were also with him other little ships. Verse 37, there arose a great storm of wind. All of a sudden, a storm happened to come up. Everything was hunky-dory until then. And the waves beat into the ship, so it was now full. That didn't take long. And he was in the hinder part of the ship, asleep on a pillow. He was peaceful and asleep. And they awake him and said, "Master, carest thou not that we perish?" And he arose and rebuked the wind, and he said unto the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. And he said to them, "Why are you so fearful? How is it you have no faith?" Because they had picked up an attitude of fear out of the circumstances that it began to prevail. Yet Jesus was riding a ship with him. And it says they had feared exceeding, saying, "Well, no, what manner of man is this, that even the wind and the sea obey him?" Well, that ought to made they should have been calm about that. Should have made them be peaceful. I'm glad he's here. But you see, circumstances have a powerful effect on your thought life. Don't tell me they don't. I mean, all you got to do is, I mean, have, you know, a pain in your body and you start thinking certain things. I mean, it begins to kick in the process of thinking. Where's that pain from? What is it for? I mean, it's certain symptoms. Well, I heard this on the radio. I heard this on TV. Or I heard this from somebody else. You know, all that stuff comes back to your mind. And you start thinking down that line. And before you know it, you find yourself in a very, very despairing mood or a cross attitude. Because, you know, you're scared now. You're doubting and you're afraid of what might be the consequences of what's going to happen. Then in Matthew chapter 14 and verse 26, this is when, again, they asked, Jesus came to him walking on the water. And when the disciples, this is Matthew 14, 26, when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a spirit," and they cried out for fear. So right away fear came in, but straightway Jesus spoke unto them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it's I, be not afraid." And Peter answered and said, "Lord, if it be thou, bid me to come unto thee on the water." And he said, "Come." And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. So it seemed like everything was okay right now. But when he saw the wind, circumstances, boisterous, he was afraid and began to sink. He cried, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand, caught him, and said unto him, "O thou little faith, wherefore did thou doubt?" So why'd you doubt, Peter? Well, he doubted because he began to look at the circumstances rather than keeping his eyes on Jesus and the word that he spoke to him. Come. He saw Jesus walking on water, and if he was doing it, and he said, "Come," and certainly you, he experienced walking on water for ever how long? Because a certain, I don't know how many steps he took, but maybe 5 or 10 steps. Then all of a sudden, he began to look around and say, "This is a little too much for me." And then before you know it, he started to go down. So Peter come walk, and then he saw the circumstances, and he began to sink. In Matthew 13, 21. Speaking here about the seed being sown. It says he has no root in himself, but endureth for a while. For when tribulation, these can be circumstances, or persecution, arises because of the word, by and by he stumbles or he falls away. Now why did he begin to be falling away? Why did he begin to give up? Because of the persecution and the tribulation. Because of the word. I mean, you come to church, you start hearing certain things, and you go home or you go to work, and you begin to express it to somebody else before you know, they start whispering about you and saying, "Watch out for that religious nut." They start saying negative things about you, and you begin to become a little afraid about those things and bothered by them, and before you know it, you begin to stumble over your own beliefs. And this is what happens to a lot of people. And you know what it says in 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 12 when we find ourselves in tribulation? Let somebody just turn there and gaze at it a minute. "Beloved, think it not strange, or don't entertain it, or don't be surprised." Don't be surprised when persecution causes trouble in your life. Don't be surprised when you find yourself in a trial. It's a normal thing to be in a trial if you're a believer. It's a normal thing to be persecuted if you're a Christian. It's not abnormal. It's normal. I mean, I think we've learned that over the years, if nothing else. It's something that comes with the believing the Bible. It's going to bring some harassment against you. And it says here, which concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you. So it's something, it's a test for you. As though some strange thing happened unto you. So there's not something strange going on. It's not something to be surprised about. I mean, the Amplified says, "Don't be bewildered. It's to test you." New American Standard Bible says, "Don't be surprised, just to test you." So why are we all of a sudden, just all of a sudden, surprised at the circumstances? Why are we surprised at the persecution? Why are we surprised at the negative attacks against us as Christians? Why are we surprised about those things? "Oh my goodness, I just can't believe they said that." What do you expect the unbelievers to say? That's what they're going to say. So don't be surprised, but don't be upset about those things. It's not something that's abnormal. It's something that's very normal. So you need to really think about these things. So how does the devil control you? He gets into your mind. Right up here. The devil gets right in your mind. That's how he controls every one of us. That's his first entrance way, is into your mind, into your thinking processes. And all it takes is something you see, something you hear, somebody you're around, something that influences you, something you watch, news you hear on the radio, some politician say something, some email that somebody sends that wants to put fear in your life. And you start believing it, and before you know it, you start repeating what they're saying, and now they've got your mind. The devil, you know, when the devil gets into your mind, you know what? He owns your mind. I mean, he's got possession of you at that point, and he's controlling the way you're thinking. He's controlling the direction you're going, and he's going to control the outcome if you let him, because you're letting him have your mind. And you start thinking that way, it's a bad thing to do. I mean, I don't like it. And so, I mean, 2 Corinthians 4:4 says he's a god of this world. He doesn't want the light of the glorious gospel to shine unto you, those who believe. He's after the believers. He's not after the unbelievers. He's already got them. He doesn't want you to believe. If you do believe, he wants to stop you from believing. He wants to slow you down. He wants to, you know, short-circuit you. He wants to somehow or another cause you to get off base, just like he did Peter when he looked at the circumstances, just like he did the whole Israel camp when they began to murmur and complain because 10 of them came back complaining. I mean, that's exactly the devil's whole plan. He came to kill, steal, and destroy. That's what his operation is. I mean, that's the way he works. We shouldn't be surprised about those things. 1 Peter 5:8 again tells us he's going about like a roaring lion. Now, I don't think that means anything to us. But if you were in Africa and you were being stalked by a roaring lion, I think it would mean a whole lot more difference. Wouldn't you? I mean, let's say you were in one of those crazy countries, tells you can't go out into the wilderness with a gun. I read about a story up in Pennsylvania where some guys went hiking out there in the wilderness of, not Pennsylvania, but in New Jersey. I can't even believe there's wilderness in New Jersey. But there must be a part of where they went hiking. And a bear stalked them. The guy took pictures. They got the camera from what happened. And they posted those pictures where he was taking them from a distance. They split up, which was stupid. And they didn't have a gun, which is stupid. If you're going out in the wilderness, take the guns. I don't like guns. Well, don't go into the wilderness. That would be the simple, smart thing to do, I would think, for somebody. Because if you're going into the wilderness, say, well, I'm going to take some bear spray. How much is that going to help you? It don't always help. It might help you against a criminal, but it ain't going to help you against a big old bear. I mean, you see, I'm talking about just black bears in this type of the community of the East Coast, but black bears can be pretty big too. They can't be big as a brown bear or Kodiak, but they can be big. Believe me, but you get yourself in a situation like that. I mean, you read 1 Peter 5:8 carefully. Be sober. Be vigilant. So that's telling us to watch out, keep your mind intact, don't lose control of your thinking, because a roaring bear is going about, like the devil's going like about like a roaring bear. He's after you. He's stalking you. And they do that. And if all he's doing is wait for an opportunity to get you. And if opportunity comes, believe me, they have no fear. And so that's how he gets into your mind right there. I mean, if you're out there and you see something like that, right away your mind goes, you see a bear track, and you think, oh my goodness. What is your mind, where's your mind going to go? Well, you know, I start saying, I wish I never left home. But anyways, here's the same thing. We're vulnerable to the devil's attacks. And we've got to see that. Because he wants to get into your mind. So he attacks it with suggestions. He attacks it with circumstances. He attacks it through people. He attacks it through education, philosophy. Even the government's involved here now, attacking us. With certain things that they say. Trying to take things from us and make things harder on us. And you know, while a lot of innocent minds are what we say unsuspecting. Oh, don't think nothing of it. It's no big deal. Well, that's the first thing I thought when I got the letter from RRS. No big deal. But it seemed like as the days went by, my mind got bigger and bigger with this thing, and I began to see what they're asking for and demanding, and I thought, this is a big deal. I don't like it. I don't like it one bit, and I was getting cross about it. I started telling my wife, find that piece of paper. Look in the files. Go find it. It's around here somewhere. She said, what did you do with it? I said, I put it in the file right where this other stuff is. But it wasn't there. Now, I guess, you know, maybe I gave it to one of those accountants once sometime down the road. I don't know. Because they ask for it when you do you have a Social Security exemption? You know, let me see your papers, and you got to take it to them. Now, if I left it with one of those and I never got it back, that could have happened. I don't know. But thank God, at least I have to give them credit. They kept copies. Thank God for that. And I have to give credit to the fact when I wrote the letter that somebody went and looked the file up. And they sent me there. They didn't write me a letter. They just sent the information to me. And it was handwritten, Philip Michael Guthrie, on the envelope. It wasn't even typed out. So I think somebody might have went around the corner and just bypassed everything. Said, I'm going to get this to this guy. Because he needs it. Maybe somebody that had a sense of duty or morals about him. But the devil's a stalker. He invades your mind. Because he wants to get into your life, and that's the only way he can get into your life, is through the mind. So everything you read, everything you see, everything you watch, everything you're around, everything you listen to on the radio, these talk show hosts and everything, all this stuff is all part of the enemy who's behind us to get into our life in one shape or another. So we have to be very guarded about those things. That's why we should be discerning about what is good and what is evil. Because you start listening enough to all the negative stuff that's going on out there, it begins to have an effect upon your thinking processes. So whoever controls your mind controls you. It's that simple. So the question is, then who's controlling your mind? Because it's going to be a few sources. It's either God, the devil, or circumstances. And we say the devil, we mean education, philosophy, politics, and reading, TV, and all that other stuff, if we can put that in that category. Or just circumstances, plain long circumstances. Car breaks down, refrigerator breaks down, microwave goes kabunk. And before you know it, you find yourself in a trial. You have to deal with that kind of thing. You find yourself worrying and being afraid. Doubts, frustration, discouragement, all these things come into your life. People get bitter, they get unforgiven, and they turn negative. And the Bible tells us in Ephesians 4, we are to forgive even as God forgave us. Do we forget that? So how did he forgive you? Freely and abundantly. He pardoned all of us. And in Isaiah he said he abundantly pardoned us and has abundantly forgiven us. I mean, he's very generous. God keeps no records on people. God's not trying to keep a file there where he's going to say, I've got this against you, I've got this against you. I mean, yes, God can be cross sometimes because God gets angry. With Israel, he got angry. His wrath was turned towards them. And so you can say sometimes, in that sense, using that phrase, God gets cross with us. And that's what brings judgment in people's lives. That's what brings chastisement. And so we have to realize that we don't keep records on people and files on people to be able to somehow or another take them to court someday, or to criticize them, or to bring them down. So you know you need to be careful how you think about a person who's wronged you. You think that person has wronged you must first forgive you. That ain't always the way it goes. God's asking you to forgive, because you're the one that's got the problem inside right now, so you got to forgive them, then let God take care of the rest. Because he says vengeance is mine, doesn't he? So that's Romans chapter 12. I mean, God says, give place to wrath, for vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. So let God have it. Now, do we think that way when we see something like this happen? Not necessarily. We're thinking the other way. I'll get back at them. I'll take care of this. And before you know it, we're going down the wrong road. I mean, Joseph could have come a bit bitter over in the Old Testament, Genesis chapter 15, if you turn over there. I mean, Joseph had a hard time. His brothers all turned against him. Then they threw him in a pit, and then they sold him out to slavery. Nice brothers, huh? But what was Joseph's attitude? Well, he had the right kind of cross attitude. He was forgiving, and he was kind, and he was gracious. Because you know that when the brothers came looking for food, they came there, and then Joseph recognized who they were, and he asked for some evidence, which would have been his younger brother, because he was concerned that they'd also had hurt him. And so here we end at the end of it, the story in Genesis chapter 50. We pick up verse 17. We'll pick up verse 16. They sent a messenger unto Joseph, saying, thy father did command before he died, saying, so that shall ye say unto Joseph, forgive, I pray thee, now the trespasses of thy brethren and their sin, for they did unto thee evil. And now we pray thee, forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of thy father. And Joseph wept when they spake unto him. And his brethren went and fell down before his eyes. And he said, behold, we be thy servants. And Joseph said unto them, fear not, for I am in the place of God. Wow. But as for you, you thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass as it is this day, to save much people. So Joseph saw the whole plan of God in this whole scenario. He was able to focus on that and not have a vengeance attitude, be cross with them, because he could have really put a hurt on them. But he didn't. So you can see there the very thing. I mean, he could have become bitter and unforgiving, but he didn't. He had a good attitude. And if you have a negative attitude towards God's word in eternity, it's going to affect you. So the devil uses that to control a lot of people. I mean, John 10:10, the devil come to kill, steal, and destroy, but God's come that we might have life and have it more abundantly. And you know what? The devil's number one weapon is guilt. He uses guilt in everybody's life to think that God doesn't forgive you, that God doesn't love you, that God doesn't care. And so we have the guilt, the condemnation, the shame in our lives. I mean, people go out and make terrible mistakes sometimes, and that terrible mistake rides with them everywhere they go. It is in their mind. It comes back. It doesn't take much for it to come right back to their mind. I mean, sometimes I can't think of the horrible things I've done when I was younger. I think, phew, I don't know why God has even put up with me as long as he has, but you realize that God is good and gracious. So, you know what? There's no way out of these things sometimes. You feel like you're trapped. You're like, just like it says in 2 Timothy, how the devil takes you prisoner. Takes you captive. That's what it says. He takes you captive at his will. And when he takes you captive, you're a captivity of the devil. You're in a prison of guilt and shame and bitterness and all the other things that come with it. I mean, you're a prisoner of war. In the last days, there's going to be an invasion of evil spirits into society that are going to come from many different avenues. They're already starting, and the government's part of it. I mean, you're going to find the media, the occult, and I mean, you look at the lot of religion out there and stuff that are just anti-everything, and the New Age stuff today. I mean, over in Revelation chapter 16, it talks about, I know I've used this before, but it's relevant. Revelation 16, verse 13, it talks about these unclean spirits. And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs. Boy, did he really pick a good image there. Come out of the mouth of the dragon, and out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. So these spirits are coming out of the mouth of these evil individuals. For they are the spirits of devils or demons, working miracles, which go forth unto the kings of the earth and unto the whole world to gather them to the battle of the great day of God Almighty. Behold, I come as a thief. Blessed is he that watcheth and keepeth his garments, lest he walk naked, and they shall see his shame. So you see there that these spirits are coming out, and they're basically attacking their unclean spirits, and that's what the devil wants to do. He wants to attack society. He wants to bring them together. He wants to bring them into war. I mean, the devil's trying to start a war now. I mean, you know, this thing that just happened with these Navy guys over in Iran waters. You know, I'm suspicious. I'm suspicious. Because the smell taste test, when you put the smell test, something about it don't smell right. And it doesn't surprise me if the president wasn't behind that. It doesn't surprise me one iota. I didn't say he was. I said, doesn't surprise me if he was. I'm not going to be, bewildered by that, because I don't think he's past that kind of stuff. So these Navy guys over there, I want you to get them. Then let them go. Because he's done enough for Iran now to cause a lot of trouble. But look over in John chapter 13. You know, the devil wants to get into your life, into all of our lives, but he can't unless we let him. It's up to you to make the right decision. John 13, verse 1. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew his hour was come, that he should depart out of the world, and the Father have loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. And supper being ended, and the devil, having put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. Now, who put it in his heart? Who put it in his mind? Who was behind that? The devil was. And so we can see right here, this is what the devil does. He puts things into your mind in order to control your life. And so can he get to your mind? Can he get into your heart and control the way you think? Can he control your decisions? Can he, control you with covetous, greed, materialism? He did Judas. He was one of the disciples, and it can happen. Isaiah 55 and verse 8 tells us, God's ways are not your ways, his thoughts are not your thoughts. So it means we have to change the way we're thinking, folks. And the only way I know to do that is Romans chapter 12, where it tells us to have our mind renewed. And that's an ongoing, I've found after 40 years, you just realize it's an ongoing process. It never stops. You just constantly seem to be working at that to make that mind renewed. Till you get to the place your mind is set on certain things. And once it is, you find yourself right. Philippians chapter 2 says, let this mind be in you, which was in Christ Jesus. Then in Philippians chapter 4, 8, think on these things that are just, lovely, good report, honest. Think on the positive things. That's what we're supposed to be focusing our mind to, and not allowing the other things to be alive in our lives to destroy us. It's all about what we see and what we look at. 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Verse 17. For our light affliction, our easy trials, which are but for a moment, momentary, they're working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. When are they working for us? While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen or visible are temporal, but the things which are not seen or eternal, these things are everlasting. They just go on. They're invisible to the eye, but they're not invisible to the heart and to the mind of a man who's willing to dwell on them. And it says that Moses endured in Hebrews 11, verse 27, Moses endured as seeing him who's invisible. Now, how do you do that? I don't know any other way but verse 18 of chapter 3 of 2 Corinthians. And as open face, we look in a glass or a mirror, we see the glory of the Lord. And by seeing his glory, it changes our way of thinking. Because we see that God is kind and gracious and good, long-suffering and patient. We see all these things about him, and they should have an effect upon us. But a lot of times it don't seem to. We seem to dwell on the wrong things rather than dwelling on that. And that's supposed to be working in our lives continually. And then Romans 12, about spending time and renewing your mind, that you might know what is a good, acceptable, and perfect will of God. When you look at the disciples, and you see their lives constantly under threat in the book of Acts, you see that they had a different mindset about things. You know what their whole mindset was? Get the gospel out. Preach the word. But they're killing them out. Doesn't make no difference. Go do what God told us to do. We're supposed to be disciples. We're supposed to give testimony and preach the good news. That's what our mission is. That's what he gave us in Matthew 28. So at the threat of death and martyrdom, what did they do? They loved not their lives unto death. That's what they did. They went right on and did what God told them to do. So what is your attitude towards certain issues? Are you cross because maybe your finances are not doing good? Are you cross because of your debt you have in your life? Are you cross at the fact that you have to give? Are you cross at somebody that has upset you or maybe offended you in some kind of way? Are you cross at your wife or your husband? We should have a cross attitude, but it's a positive one. It's not a negative one. Not angry but we should have an attitude of denying ourselves and taking up the cross. To be forgiven, to be loving, be helpful, to be prayerful. That's the kind of cross we should have. That's the kind of thinking we should have in our life. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 5. Because I think this offsets all of the other in a positive way. Let's see. Let's start in verse 4. Philippians 2, verse 4. Because when you look at Matthew 16, 24, he says, unless a man take up his cross and deny himself and follow me, he cannot be my disciple. It says the same thing in Luke 14, 26. If any man come after me, let him hate his mother, his father, his brother, his sister, his wife, and his own life, or he cannot be my disciple. You see it in Luke 9, 23. Unless a man take up his cross daily, he cannot be my disciple. You see it in Galatians 2, 20. I'm crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live, yet not I. But Christ liveth in me, and the life I now live, I live by the faith of the Son of God. I mean, that is our attitude, mindset. That's what it's supposed to be. But often it's not. So that's what we should have in our lives. In Philippians chapter 2 and verse 4, look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. Now you tell me that's easy. It doesn't mean to covet them either. It just means to look out for everybody else. I mean, to be able to pay attention and to look and even consider what this word could mean. Matter of fact, it's translated that over in consider in Galatians 6:1. Listen to this. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, you which are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of anger? No, meekness. Considering yourself. In other words, taking heed and looking to yourself. That's what it means. Considering yourself, lest thou also be tempted. Do we ever think that way about what can happen to us if we have a wrong attitude? If we're going to be angry towards everybody else and upset and bitter, I mean, what's going to come back upon us? Because if we're going to sow what we reap, we should not be weary in well-doing. Because this is what God tells us to do. And then we go back to Philippians chapter 2 and verse 5. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. So what kind of mindset did he have? Because this is what we're supposed to have. Who being in the form of God, thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation, took upon him the form of a servant, and was made in the likeness of man. Being found in the fashion as a man, he humbled himself, became obedient unto the death, even the death of the cross. And because of that, God highly exalted him. So that's the mindset we're supposed to have, to humble ourselves and to be obedient to God, even if it means the death of ourselves. I'm not just talking about physically here. It could come to that. But always about just giving up and letting go of those things in your life that are troubling you. The doubts and the fears and the attitudes of anger and bitterness and jealousy and envy. Let go of them because they're not doing you any good. Because a man who gives place to anger and bitterness and hate is a man who is going to always have a problem in his life. He'll always be angry about something because he's given place to it. Galatians 5:24. And they that are Christ have crucified the flesh and the affections or passions. And lust. And so if you're Christ, then you have a cross attitude that is looking at the cross and saying, what does God require of me? I mean, you know, your affections and lust, they're as dead and having no power over us. That's the way we're supposed to look at them. In other words, all of those things that rise up, and you know, we're drawn away by our own lust. And if that's true, and it is because it says so, then that means we should look at them as if they're dead. Remember what Romans 6 says? I'm going to remind you. Romans 6. Speaking of Christ's death and baptism and all, and how we're identified with him in baptism and death. And then verse 6, knowing this, that our old man was crucified with him. That's legally done. That the body of sin might be destroyed, and henceforth we should not serve sin. Then verse 9, knowing this, that Christ, being raised from the dead, dieth no more, death hath no more dominion over him. Notice that, no more dominion over him. For in that he died unto sin once, but in that he liveth unto God. Likewise, this is the important part, reckon yourself also to be dead indeed unto sin. So that's, I mean, you got to esteem those things as dead. They don't have any jurisdiction over you unless you let them, unless you yield to them. But be alive unto Christ through Jesus Christ the Lord. Let not sin reign in your mortal bodies, that you should obey it in lust there. I think it's very clear. Then verse 13, neither yield your members as instruments of unrighteousness unto sin, but yield yourself unto God as those that are alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness unto God. For sin shall not have dominion over you. Passions, lust, and anger, those things don't have any control over you anymore. They're as dead. And so that's how you have to look at those kind of things, because when you do that, you have the right kind of cross attitude. You're taking up the cross and saying, I deny those things right in my life. I'm not going to let them control me anymore or have an effect in my life or my decisions, because it gets down to the bottom line of this whole thing as far as I'm concerned. I mean, the cross attitude, how will my choices and my decisions affect other people? Because everything, I got to think that way, don't I? Because if I make a decision that's bad and it's going to affect other people in a negative way, then I'm not really thinking, having a cross attitude in the right kind of way. I don't care what other people think. That's what some people say most of the time, and I know what you mean by that sometimes, because really, people are not supposed to control what you think. God is. But God's one who's telling you to think a certain way, and that means to consider other people. And consider is translated over in 2 Corinthians 4, as we say, look not at. So don't look at those things. Don't consider them. Don't even look at them. That's what he's telling us when he uses the word consider. So how will my actions affect others? How will it affect my family? How will it affect the people in the church? How will it affect people on the job? It gets down to our testimony, does it not? Consider how it will affect other people. Because that's what it tells us about over in, again, back in Philippians chapter 2. Verse 1, if there be therefore any consolation in Christ, any comfort of love, any fellowship of the Spirit, any bowels and mercies, fulfill ye my joy that ye be like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind, let nothing be done through a cross attitude. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem others better than themselves. We don't do that. But that would be the right kind of cross attitude, no doubt about it. First part of verse 3 is having a cross attitude where you're angry and bitter or something's going on and you're not being humble, you're being proud, you're being arrogant and indifferent. But the right kind of cross attitude is to be humble and esteem others better than yourself in all of the decisions you make. And so when we think that kind of way, I think we're going to have a whole different mindset, and we're going to find something different when we look at this cross. We're going to not see that sad-looking face up there, or angry-looking faces, all distorted. We're going to see a happy guy up there, or gal. You know why? Because he's blessed. He's blessed in his doing, is what God promises us. So as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So how are you? What's inside you? Because it's important what you're thinking, and what your mentality is. Because it'll affect all the decisions you make. It'll affect your relationships. It'll affect your prayer life. It's nothing it doesn't affect, because if this is working like it's supposed to, then everything's going to work right. So bow your hearts with me. Father, we just ask you to continue to work in our lives and to change us from within and to cause us to have the right attitude and everything that we do, to make the right decisions, the right choices, and to consider how it affects our children, our brother, our sisters, how it affects the people we work with, the people we live around, everybody we are around or associated with. How will this affect them? Will it be a stumbling block or will it be a building stone? And let us make the right decision based on your word. And we ask for your help in Jesus' name.